Hello, and welcome to Calamity, a podcast about natural and not-so-natural disasters. In each episode, we examine a catastrophic event from world history. We are your hosts, the Kuhlman Sisters.
I'm Jema.
I'm Jillian.
And I'm Caitlin.
This is episode 2 of the podcast, and today's Calamity takes us to a small town in western Pennsylvania, in 1889. So this is the story of the famous Johnstown flood. It's also known as the Great Flood of 1889. So let's go there. It's May 31st, 1889.
You said Johns or Jones?
Johnstown.
Johns. J-O-H-N. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Johnstown. And named after a guy named John. Whoa. There's some backstory there, but I'm not going to tell you about it. The town was formed in 1800, and so at this point it's about 90 years old, and it's actually a pretty bustling town. It's situated at the confluence of two rivers, or creeks, really. There's the Stony Creek, and then there's the Little Conemaugh River.
Mm-hmm.
They combine to form the Conemaugh River. Does that make sense?
Okay, sure. Yeah.
And that happens kind of right in the middle of town. And the other... So that, of course, anytime there's a confluence, that's usually a great place to have a town.
Correct.
And they also, the state of Pennsylvania during the 1800s, I think starting in like the 1830s or so, they decided they wanted to put in a series of canals around the state to move mm-hmm. goods around mm-hmm. and yep. for the benefit of the economy, et cetera. So they built this intricate canal system, and the canals went right through Johnstown, so that was great.
Okay,
this is probably the same time they were like working on connecting all the Great Lakes, and this was like going to be the next
yes.
big thing to move all this stuff was
100%
all the rivers. Yeah,
it was mm-hmm. the coolest thing at the time.
And as soon as it was all built, the railroads showed up.
Hey, you're stealing my line.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We all know a little bit.
We know too much history.
No, that's exactly what happened. So initially they had the canal system that came right through, and then as soon as that canal system was complete, the railroads became the next big thing. But the railroad came right through that town as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like some towns ended up kind of just dying after the canals went away, but this town got the railroad as well. So it was in good shape. And Johnstown was in particular known for its steel plant. They made really, really good, high quality steel.
Okay.
In Johnstown, among other things. By the time this happens, the flood happens in 1889, the town has almost 30,000 people in it. That's pretty darn big for that time.
Okay.
30,000. Yeah, pretty big. Let's see. Okay, so the town is situated in a pretty narrow valley. Mm-hmm. And what's in the base of the valley?
I can see where this is going already.
Just setting the scene, Caitlin. Just setting the scene.
So in the base of the valley where the town is, it is a floodplain. Like, the people who live there are used to a little bit of flooding every spring. You mm-hmm. know, it's not that unusual for one or two of the rivers to overflow their banks. But this particular year, and especially this time of year, again, it was May, end of May, they had the heaviest rains that had ever been seen in that part of the world. I think it was raining like 10 inches every 24 hours. Too
wow.
much. Yeah. But let me, before I get into all the rain stuff, let me talk to you about the South Fork Dam.
Okay.
This is, it was initially.
I'm assuming this is on the South Fork.
Is this going to be another dam story?
It's another dam story. Yeah. Caitlin, I don't know why it's called the South Fork, because it's on the Conemaugh River. That's a mystery.
Is it south?
No, it's east.
Oh my goodness!
Of the town.
I thought it was a gimme.
And there's no forks, knives, or spoons involved.
Really?
In this whole
Not
story.
Not even a teacup.
Not even a teaspoon. so this The South Fork Dam was built as part of the canal system. I don't know why, but they needed a dam and a reservoir. I don't know enough about canals and canal building to know why that was the case. This was not actually part of the canal system, but it was built as a part of that system. How's that for clarity?
Oh,
does anyone have any questions?
Very scientific.
Yeah, so the dam is an earthen dam. And these are all over the country, but they're not the the best kind of dam.
They're made out of earth.
And if you have to build them just right, like out of the right materials and with constant upkeep, or else they'll erode away.
Uh-huh.
Or they will become, if the earth in the dam becomes saturated with water, then they'll just collapse. So they were of effort to maintain. But once they were done, once the state of Pennsylvania was pretty much done with the canal system, it just kind of sat unused for a while. Both the reservoir behind it, which they called Lake Conemaugh, and the dam itself just kind of sat there.
So
and
no, then no maintenance is what you're saying.
No maintenance, yeah. There's no, they were just like, there's no point. We're not using this and we don't care.
Well, how far away is this from a town?
It is 14 miles from the town of Johnstown.
Okay,
14 miles upriver. And after a while, the railroad purchased the canal system, the defunct canal system, from the state of Pennsylvania. I don't know exactly why they didn't need canals, but I assume they just wanted like the land. Maybe those were the best place for a canal or a railroad, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they bought the canal system, and so in purchasing the canals, they also got this stupid dam and reservoir that they didn't even want or need. And so they sold that piece off to just some private interests. And in fact, it went to a group of speculators from Pittsburgh, some super rich people. Some of the names you might recognize, there was Henry Clay Frick.
Oh, yeah. And he's got an art museum.
Okay. Yeah, he was super
rich. In New York. And,
the Carnegie family, they owned a bunch of steel interests around that area. So that was another big family that was involved. They... anyway, they all went in together, this group of rich people, and they purchased the dam and the reservoir. And then they built a bunch of little cottages around the edge of the reservoir. Again, it's called Lake Conemaugh. Mm-hmm. And they built a really cute, really big clubhouse called the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club.
All right, so this
it's
is
exclusive,
our
exclusive, private. They get, you know, no one can go there except them and their friends.
That makes sense. It's a little summer home situation.
Right. And they want to make the far side of the lake more accessible. So they take the dam and they kind of flatten the top of it so that they can put a road across the top.
Mm-hmm.
Like imagine you've got a triangle and then you cut the top off to make it flat on top instead. A trapezoid,
right.
If you will. And so they do that. So that lowers the height of the dam. And then when the railroads had owned it, or it could have even been when the state of Pennsylvania had owned it, while it was just sitting there defunct, they had sold off some of the pieces of the dam as scrap metal, including like parts of the spillway which lets water go out around the dam.
Uh-huh.
And kind of a, there was like metal tunnels, tubes or something.
Yeah.
They had sold all of that for scrap metal. And when these rich people bought it, they didn't replace that or anything. They just left it as is. Good thinking.
Very.
And then the other thing that was, sorry, go ahead.
No, very good thinking. I just am agreeing.
Yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really.
It's all
smart,
coming together.
Yeah.
It's a very good
smart
story.
Smart decisions, mm-hmm. And great trajectory ahead.
Yes. And then, just for fun, there was a spillway that kind of went across the top of the dam. Again, it was intended to let water through in case the water got really high without having the water have to spill over the dam, which is really bad for an earthen dam.
Mm-hmm.
But the rich people wanted to stock the lake with fish, and they didn't want the fish to get away.
Rich.
So they put a screen up, like a metal screen. Yeah. I mean, the water could still get through, but the fish couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure the problem is it would become muddy and clogged.
Yes, not just mud, but like trees and what, just all the kind of stuff that comes down a river.
Yeah,
got trapped against that screen, and so it was basically water couldn't get through. At least not enough water.
So less to have a screen, more of a dam. Okay. So,
sorry, did you guys hear that? My phone rang for a second.
More smart decisions by the rich people, I see.
Everyone's making great decisions. Okay, let's see. And then the phone stops.
And I'm assuming sometime in the next few minutes we find out that gravity comes into play.
Gravity? It might.
Maybe like a downhill gravity scenario.
And possibly some laws of liquid dynamics and other things.
Okay. So we're
in
May. Rich people are moved in.
Yes. I will say, just real quick, after the clubhouse opened, the dam did frequently spring leaks. Like, it wasn't uncommon mm-hmm. for it to spring a leak here and there, and they would patch it. They never got, like, an engineer in to fix it or anything. They just had, like, they would hire a work crew to patch the leaks with mud and straw.
Okay. And they weren't worried about this at all. They just had no...
Well, they were a little worried about it. I think they just... there's just this feeling that it won't happen on my watch. I don't know. I have no idea. So they did say, so the folks who lived downstream in Johnstown were very aware that this rickety old dam was up there. And every so often, every couple of years, somebody would get angry about it and write something in the local paper about it or whatever.
Like you do.
But they really, you know, there was no way to fight these guys, and they owned it. It was their private property.
Mm-hmm.
And so you couldn't really, they didn't have a leg to stand on to try and get them to fix it. And also this was early in American jurisprudence, so there weren't that many, like, protections
right.
for the little guy anyway. And sometimes when the dam would spring a leak or when there was heavy rains and... there was like a little bit of a fear of some flooding.
Mm-hmm.
The folks up at the lake would send a telegram down to the main switchboard in Johnstown. And they would say, hey, just so you know, you might want to evacuate. And they, you know, off and on they would, but it was always a false alarm.
Yep.
You know how that goes. You just get complacent because it happens so many times and you're just wanting to go about your life and...
I'm just want to back up a second. Their summer homes on this beautiful lake had the ability to telegram.
They're rich people, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the homes. I think it was probably from the clubhouse itself.
I just didn't, you know, I'm thinking like this remote mountainous area and, in here we have all the fineries of, first world stuff. So more painting of the picture.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's.
So they've done that several times, and essentially now that the telegrams have come in several times, the people who live down below are just like, well, okay, this is really not that big a deal. They always do this, and nothing's going to happen. So it's kind of one of those boy cried wolf scenarios.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, I think the thinking might have been even if. There is a problem upstream. No one quite anticipated that it would be this bad.
Ah.
Like that the whole dam would go, which is what's about to happen.
Okay.
Prepare yourself, Caitlin.
All right, so a few...
Prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
The disaster's coming. Get ready.
Okay.
Squeeze your eyes closed. So a few days before the 31st of May, the rain starts, and it's this huge weather pattern that's covers multiple states. But this part of Pennsylvania got hit the worst. Heaviest rainfall event that had ever been recorded in that part of the United States. And during the night, small creeks became big rivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went from being, you know, a little creek to something that was like ripping out trees and downing telephone or telegraph wires and that kind of thing, washing away the edge, you know, the edges and things, and overwhelming the banks. So even in the town of Johnstown, those couple days, the town was already flooded. It had between like 2 and 10 feet of water.
Wow.
In the main part of the town, depending on what part of town you were in. But I mean, obviously where there's 10 feet, there's no business going on, but where there's 2 feet of water, people are still kind of like wading through the water and going shopping and doing stuff, which is pretty crazy. But they're kind of used to there being some flooding.
Well, they didn't know that this was going to be the worst one ever. I mean, they just thought, I've done this before.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So morning of May 31st. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I have my eyes squeezed shut.
Okay, good. So just above the South Fork Dam, the president of the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club, his name was Elias Unger.
Elias?
He woke up in... Elias. Okay. Or Elias?
Probably Elias.
I don't know. Unger.
Beautiful name.
Look, he's not going to be a major player. Okay. I didn't even have to say his name. I could have just said the president. So he woke up in his little, you know, cabin on the lake, mansion/cabin on the lake. And he looked at the lake and saw that it had overnight become huge. It had swollen basically, and it was almost to the top of the dam already. And so he got a bunch of guys together, and they went to work trying to come up with a solution. So some of them tried to unclog the spillway where they had their fish screen, which was now clogged, especially because of all the runoff. It was now clogged with tons of debris and trees and stuff.
Right.
And so they were trying to do that very unsuccessfully. He had another group of guys who were trying to build up the top of the dam.
Yep.
Like adding dirt and rocks and mud and stuff.
Which at that time,
to the top.
At that time, there's no heavy equipment. I mean, you're talking wheelbarrows, maybe. I don't know. Like, I can't imagine that being a very successful or quick, efficient solve. And it's probably still raining.
I don't know what they were using, but I can. It is. It's raining very hard.
Gosh.
It's still raining really hard. Mm-hmm. And then some of the guys tried to dig a ditch around the edge of the dam
mm-hmm.
to kind of create a spillway.
Yeah.
But that, again, like, it was too little too late at that point. And so let's see. While they were doing this work, three times they sent someone to the telegraph office to send a warning to the people of Johnstown explaining what was happening. And you know, trying to say, you know, the dam is in critical mm-hmm. condition. The warnings arrived in Johnstown. They were read by, I don't know, the people at the telegraph office, but they were never passed along to authorities. I think, again, there have just been so many false alarms that they just didn't think anything of it. Like, I'm sure they would have been passed along to authorities eventually, but it was not considered urgent enough to like run them over right away.
Yeah.
Well, because floods usually, I mean, I think they were expecting it to be kind of a slower growing
thing. Yeah, kind mm-hmm. of just building hour by hour.
Like they're saying, okay, I've got 2 feet of water already. It'll be 3, it'll be 4. I'll run up the hill when it's 5 and that type of thing, you know.
Sure. So in the afternoon, early afternoon, about 1:30. So these guys have been working on this for really just the morning and an hour in the afternoon. Not that long. But they decided it was too dangerous to be on the dam any longer, and they weren't making any progress. Mm. So they pulled back, and they just went to high ground and watched. Ooh. There was nothing they could do.
Yikes.
But just, like, wait. And so that was at about 1:30, and it was almost 3 o'clock when the South Fork Dam breached. And they did some modern computer modeling to kind of look at how it probably would have gone. And it looks like it would have taken about an hour for the lake to empty after the dam started mm-hmm. to fail.
That's a lot of water.
Yeah, it is. It is 14.55 million cubic meters of water. I'm sure that helps you.
Yeah, it picture. Does. Oh,
it's 3 points.
When we were at Niagara Falls, they were measuring that in bathtubs. Can you give it to me in that's bathtubs? Right. And
I don't know how many bathtubs. I have no idea how many bathtubs were in there.
How many bathtubs of water does that equate to? It gives me a better picture.
I know. That's a very precise mm-hmm. measurement there at Niagara. Okay, so there's a few towns, just small little villages that the water hits before it gets to Johnstown. But honestly, there's not that. I mean, the damage is pretty bad. Like entire towns get washed away, but there's not a big death toll. Like, I think the first town maybe has 2 deaths, and the second one has 16, which is nothing compared to what happens downstream. So people are mostly able to, like, scramble up the hill and get out of the way of the water. And also, I mean, I'm sure the water's going relatively fast at this point, but it picks up a lot of speed as it heads downhill towards mm-hmm. Johnstown.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
And maybe you're about to jump into this, so I'm sorry if I'm cutting you off, but I remember hearing Jema tell me a story once about this flood that happened in, I don't know, France or somewhere, and there
spoiler
was
alert, spoiler alert.
Well, the shaking of the ground.
That was what we were gonna do next week, Caitlin.
Oh
no, just kidding. No. We're not gonna do
the shaking of the ground. Like that there's reverberations that happen kind of in advance. Mm-hmm. Is there any talk about that happening in this case? Like people kind of being forewarned because they can feel the earth shaking?
I didn't read anything about that.
Okay.
Definitely the sound.
Caitlin, I think that happened in that story. It happened on they could feel it on the bridge that crossed the water.
Oh, okay. That was probably already in the water. Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So no vibrations, but you're saying you can kind of hear a crashing, because I'm sure it's like, it's taking out all kinds of trees and debris and dislodging everything.
Absolutely. You are picturing it perfectly. And some people said it sounded like a freight train. Some people said they thought it was an explosion.
Hmm.
I mean, there were a lot of different descriptions of what it was, but it was a really loud sound. Let's see. So it hits a few small towns, and then there's a viaduct, which I guess is a fancy word for a railroad bridge.
Yeah.
And it's like 78 feet tall. And again, well, we're significantly above Johnstown. But the debris and the water hits this viaduct and it stops. Like it all gets kind of caught up. I mean, the viaduct is not entirely solid. It's a stone. It's made of stone, but it has these big right. arches.
Oh,
that water would go through. But the, you know, with all the trees and debris and like houses that have now joined this lovely flood, it gets stuck there. And in fact, it's stuck there for 7 minutes.
Hmm.
And during that 7 minutes, the water is building up pressure behind it. And then eventually the viaduct breaks and the water pushes on. But because it was stuck there for 7 minutes and it built up this crazy amount of pressure, that actually made the whole thing move much more explosively and much faster and more dangerous than it would have otherwise. Like a slingshot or something like that. Like the tension of it being backed up against the bridge. Hmm. Or I'm sorry, the viaduct. So then right above the town there was a steel plant and a wire plant. So they made steel and they made barbed wire, I believe. Probably some other things too, but mainly those two things. These two big, really big manufacturers of these two things. And as the water hit those plants, they exploded. Something about the boiler, the water hitting the boilers exploded. It wasn't clear to me, but it released a ton of black smoke, really dark black smoke, into the air. Plus now this front of this horrible wave that's heading downstream was full of barbed wire and sharp pieces of metal and, smokestack pieces.
Pipe bomb, a waterborne pipe bomb.
You don't want to swim in this, is what I'm saying. But a lot of people are about to go for a swim. And now it's got this black smoke that's kind of rolling. So the descriptions of people as it starts to kind of roll into Johnstown, the descriptions of people who saw it and then survived. First of all, it wasn't water.
Yeah.
There was no indication that it was water. Everything that you saw was like a rolling cascade of buildings and metal and trees and dead horses.
Wow.
Who knows what else? There was no splashing.
Yeah.
It was just solid debris in the front. And I've looked at some videos online. This, of course, was before YouTube. Slightly before.
The flood was before YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did look at some other floods or tidal waves that have a similar kind of thing. I think especially some parts of the Japan earthquake and tidal wave from a few years ago. Most of the footage I'd seen of that was kind of from the air or from above, like people who were standing on tall buildings and watching the water come in.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that kind of footage, but there is just a little bit of footage you can find of people who are closer to the ground, and it absolutely is just a wall of debris.
It's kind of like the water is kind of like a snowplow pushing all that junk in front of it, you know, before it overtakes it.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, just crazy. So I can't imagine what you would even think seeing that. And especially because at this point it has all that black smoke, and a bunch of people talked about how with the black smoke around this stuff, it was impossible to figure out what it was that was coming at you.
Must have been apocalyptic.
Somebody thought it was a swarm of something because the black smoke could have been bugs or something. But just impossible to know what was happening. At least in that first split second.
Yeah.
So it starts roaring into town and it levels everything. I mean, houses just immediately are taken. So your house is completely crushed or it's picked up off of its
and just moved
foundation and it's just moved. So, I mean, you might be in your attic because a lot of people did rush. They either rushed up the hill if they could, or they went up to the top floor of their home. And some of those people did, like, if you could get out onto your roof or a roof or a large piece of debris, you could kind of ride the top.
That sounds like no.
Yeah, but there was so much that could crush you.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't riding necessarily on water. I mean, you were on water, but, you know, half the time you might be up on a log or, a tall house might fall.
Well, these
on
are
you.
Old stick it was houses. Crazy. And, I mean, I can't imagine that there's a chance they're going to stay
basic
together.
Wood frame homes.
They're just going to disintegrate like kindling.
They fell apart exactly, for the most part. Even some of the big, like, downtown brick buildings, they were just, like, picked up and moved. They didn't stand a chance. Let's see. So a couple things happened at this point. First of all, the way that the town... Did someone just laugh? I thought I heard a laugh.
Nope.
Yeah, now we're laughing.
Okay. I don't know what that was. I'm like, who's laughing? That wasn't funny. The way that the town is situated, there's the river takes a turn right below, or kind of in the town, actually. Not even at the end of town. The river takes a turn. So the river actually, or this wave actually hits a really tall hill, like hits it head on, where normally the river would make a nice curve in the valley,
right?
Takes mm-hmm. a turn, but this here, like at first it goes straight into the hillside, and that causes it to reverse its flow.
Whoa!
So
that is
so I it just goes thought it would just back
it,
up.
That's insane, because I thought, oh sure, it hits it and then eventually just routes, you know, to the best, you know, takes it the turn naturally and keeps going. But that is such a force to actually. And it obviously speaks to the turn itself and the angle of it to have reversed yeah. back. Wow. And of course, yes. the people who are riding it now, who are yep. in it and on
riding it.
Riding it?
Back up.
Well, what else are we going to call
She's
it?
She's thinking it's like a rodeo.
Well,
yeehaw!
I mean, probably not that fun, but I mean, they're riding on the wave or riding on top of it.
Yes, no, there absolutely are people who are either swimming or trying to stay afloat. And so the water, now, of course, the water is still coursing downstream.
Mm-hmm.
But then once it hits the wall, so water is going all different directions now.
Okay.
But certainly there's a huge surge that goes back up the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much if you did happen to magically survive, if your house or building managed to survive the first wave, it probably is not going to survive the second one. As it hits you in the other direction. And there's also a second, remember how there's a confluence of rivers?
Mm-hmm.
So this happened on the Little Conemaugh River, and the other one was called Stony Creek, which there were plenty of people living up in Stony Creek Valley as well, kind of like just outside the town. And they, you would have thought they'd be safe from this because they're in a completely different valley. But when the river reverses, that whole valley gets washed wow. out as well.
Huh.
So there were people who were like kind of standing there kind of watching, and then they just got inundated unexpectedly when it switches course. So things are, it's chaos. The water splashing around everywhere. Now, water, of course, does eventually kind of starting to drain downstream. Like you said, Caitlin, it's making its way around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's slowed down just a little bit because some of the water, I think that just happens when the water's going different directions, it's lost some of its momentum.
Yeah.
And there's a stone bridge right at the end of town. And I think it's a railroad bridge. It's really well built. And debris starts to pile up against it. Houses and trees and people and horses and barbed wire and whatever else you can imagine start to pile up. And because the river isn't moving as fast, it doesn't have as much power behind it. It's not like with the viaduct where the pressure builds and builds and it eventually right. breaks. The bridge never breaks. It just holds, it creates a huge wall of debris. And I mean, they describe it almost as a mountain of debris, but photos of it. By this time, it's almost getting dark. It's in the evening now, but there are photos the next day, and I wouldn't describe it as a mountain. It's more like a deep plain of debris. But it's all just kind of stuck there and smashed against the bridge. And then what happens? What do you think? It's what always happens.
The water comes back.
Jayma, give a guess.
Well, you said the bridge didn't break.
The bridge didn't break.
So it finds another way. Gravity. I feel like I'm failing.
No, the pile of debris catches on fire. I'm sorry. This always happens in a tidal wave or whatever. There's always some element of something catches on fire. Anyway, so this huge tower of debris
clearly I have
catches on fire.
I have a lot to learn about disasters because I had no idea that was a common.
Well, you've come to the right place, my friend.
Okay, so I'm talking about floods. Yeah. I should expect fire. Okay, check.
You should. You should, because as you know, things are being pulled out. You know.
Oh, it I mean, makes sense. Yes, a little.
There's a number of different things that could catch fire.
Okay.
And some of that stuff isn't very wet because it's hardly even touched the water.
Mm.
anyway, it catches fire and it burns throughout the night. And it's, the people describe it as a hellscape. The people who are watching. I mean, at this point, some of the water is drained downstream, but the flood itself, the damage of the major damage of the flood is pretty much over. This is kind of the last nasty thing that it does, is it burns this debris pile. And they estimate there are about 80 people in the debris who burn alive that night. They find them eventually. But through the night, I mean, people are standing along the hillside and they're watching, and there's nothing they can do, but they can hear people screaming, and it's awful, awful, awful. They just really describe that as like a total hellscape that they'll never forget, that huge fire. And there are some pretty great drawings of it. I don't mean great as in happy, but great as in well done. Kind of recreations of it. If you look at Google Images, there's some pretty good ones that kind of show what it was like. Although there were photographs by this point, and the next day there are plenty of photos that were taken of the aftermath. And you can kind of see what the debris piles looked like. The most famous photo that was taken that day, there's a house that's on its side. And like it's like pretty much intact, but just laying on its side, a big two-story house. And there's a giant like fir tree stuck through the upper window, like sticking out like 40 feet into the air. It's a pretty compelling image.
Were you able to find those online?
Yes. Absolutely.
Maybe we can there's put also the link later.
Possibly we shall. There's also some video. I did
an 1889 video of the flood. A no. YouTube video.
Do they have Snapchat?
Yes, a YouTube video. On YouTube, there's a video called "The Johnstown Flood of 1889," and it's just a little educational thing that it's 15 minutes long. I can't quite tell. It said it was uploaded by James Power, but I don't know who that is. But it just has a lot of the photos and it tells the story. But let me tell you a little bit more, because there's some stuff that happens in the aftermath. Let's see. All right. The total death toll was calculated at about 2,210 people. It was the largest loss of civilian life in the United States at that time. It was later surpassed by some hurricanes. And actually, there's only two things that have surpassed it. The 1900 Galveston hurricane, which I will totally tell you about in a future episode. Super interesting. 1900. And then the September 11 terrorist attacks. And then, let's see. About a third of the dead were never identified. So they put together a burial plot called the Plot of the Unknown. And those remains are all buried together in that space, just outside of the town. Let's see. 1,600 homes were destroyed. $17 million in property damage, which is about $5 million in today's dollars. And the downtown of Johnstown was completely destroyed. And it took years for it to come back.
So here's my question. The rich people who lived up on the hill, did they feel so bad? And like, were they not able to ever go back to their homes? Or did they just
did they pay to rebuild the town?
Let's talk about them. Obviously, some of the people down below the destroyed dam blamed the people, the members of the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club, for the disaster. Because they had basically redesigned the dam to be a time bomb. So they were totally accused of failing to maintain the dam, and they did bring a court case. Some of the people got together and brought a court case. But the club won the court case.
Yeah, right.
I mean, of course they had more money and better lawyers, but also at that time, there wasn't kind of the way the law was written. You had to prove not just that they had done the damage, but that they had intended to do the damage. Now, that law has changed. In fact, this was one of the main cases that was cited in the changing of the law. They were like, this isn't right, because it's still negligence. Like, even if you didn't realize that you could kill 2,000 people, like, you still were so negligent that you need to have some kind of repercussion. So the law has actually changed after that. But yeah, their summer homes were fine. I mean, they lost their lake.
Bummer. Their houses were fine, though?
It drained over the dam. Their houses were fine. I mean, a few of them may have flooded a little.
They were just on
them. But, you know, they weren't caught in the flood. They were just caught in, like, regular flooding. The lake just drained out from underneath them, basically. So they had to go probably find some other lake to buy. Let's see. Oh, yeah, effect on American law. And then I also wanted to say this, one of the cool things about this particular disaster is that one of the very first outsiders to arrive to help people put the town back together was Clara Barton, who was the founder of the American Red Cross. And this was like their first major disaster relief effort that the American Red Cross did. It wasn't just her. It was her and a ton of volunteers, mostly nurses. They stayed in the town for 5 or 6 months and helped out. And they also gathered donations from all around the country and all around the globe, in fact. Money came in from Russia and France and Great Britain and Australia. And they ended up collecting almost $4 million for Johnstown Relief. So it was kind of like the first big Red Cross response, which I think is pretty cool. And of course, the Red Cross is still responding to things like this. If this were to happen today, they would be there in a heartbeat. So if this story moves you, I would say donate to the American Red Cross, because I love them. I wanted to read a poem. I'm coming to the end here, but I wanted to read a poem. It's a little rough, but it's by a man named Isaac Reed. And it goes like this. Many thousand human lives, butchered husbands, slaughtered wives, mangled daughters, bleeding sons, hosts of martyred little ones, worse than Herod's awful crime, sent to heaven before their time. Lovers burnt and sweethearts drowned, darlings lost but never found. All the horrors that hell could wish, such was the price that was paid for fame. There you go.
Wow.
A little poem to wrap it up. So, I want to say, I mentioned the YouTube videos that you can watch about this. And there's also a really great Wikipedia coverage of this. But David McCullough, incredible author who's written like a million books about history. He wrote a book called The Johnstown Flood. And I did get some of this information from him. I didn't read the whole book, but I read the exciting parts.
I just skipped the physics about how the dams actually work.
It's
how and viaducts.
Clearly, I did. Yes. Yeah. But yes, he wrote what is clearly a very, very good book, well reviewed and a national bestseller. So, if you are interested in learning the whole story, that's probably the
pretty
best
impressive. I guess, Jillian, I want to know for our listeners, people who are interested in disasters, calamities of all shapes and sizes, I guess, what to do in an instance where there is flooding,
You know, go to higher ground, essentially evacuate, get the heck out of there. Don't wait. I mean, that sounds to be, seems to be the most logical, and yet none of these people, you know, they were all just going around doing their own business. So.
Yeah. And it's again, you have to get your brain around mm-hmm. the whole boy who cried wolf fallacy. Every new threat could be the real threat. You can't be like, well, it's usually nothing. Like, you can't think like that. Every new threat could be the real thing. And if you really want to be safe and keep your family safe, mm-hmm. you have to treat it as a real thing every time. This happens with fires too, like building fires. You yep. get so used to doing like fire drills. You know, half the time the fire alarm goes off and you don't leave the building. You mingle around, you ask your coworkers if they know anything, you finish some things up, and you know, that's that kind of stuff could end up getting you killed. So
I also think these,
if there's an actual disaster.
So just take it seriously. In certain areas, I think they have like ground monitors and other early warning systems that, you know, they just weren't capable of then. So I think so.
And yes. Twitter.
Yeah, that too. I think you would get a little bit more notice. Yeah. I mean, even in a catastrophic flood, I think you'd have a little more notice these days about how bad it's going to be. And, you know, still people don't always follow directions very well, but
yeah.
But and the dams are all
some rich guys just sending, you know, a
equipped
telegram
with these kinds of things that, yeah.
Inspected.
Not exactly.
Yeah. For the most part. Not that a dam will ever fail now, but it's not perfect, but it's better. And that's the thing, is pretty much, and I love this about humanity, pretty much every time there's one of these disasters, there's a little bit like, here's what we learned. And after this, we changed the laws.
Better safety.
And we made, mm-hmm. you know, dams safer. And we made better, you know, we eventually came up with better warning mm-hmm. systems. And we built buildings stronger. And we learned how to, you know, handle floods a little better and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So we learn. We really do. Not always as much as we should, but.
Wow. Good story, Jill.
We really do. We've come a
long
way.
Yeah, good story.
Yay!
Absolutely.
I'm glad you enjoyed episode
two. You already really told us where we can go to learn more, and then we also already talked about you know, the beginning of the American Red Cross and the great work that they do. So I think our listeners have some resources to go check out. So I guess if there's anything else, I'd love to hear a little bit more about what we're going to hear about next week in our next episode. And then I've also got some social media plugs to do.
Ooh. All right. Well, next week is going to be very different, but very interesting and just as intriguing. We're going to be talking or learning about the New York City blackout of 1977.
Are there black lights?
It is
involved?
A good story.
Not quite the same thing.
No.
See, a black light requires electricity, and during a blackout, there's
black,
no electricity.
Then the black light is like really useless. I want. Can we have one about a party? Like really, like every fifth episode. Yeah.
A disastrous party.
I think she wants something with a happy ending.
I know.
You're on the wrong podcast, Caitlin.
Okay. Well, that's going to be really fun next week. I'm excited to hear more about it, especially like after diving into the, you know, more historical ones. I think it's going to be fun to do something that's a little bit more recent. And so I want all our listeners to know mm-hmm. If they have really good ideas for episodes they want us to cover, in addition to if you've had your own flood story. We want to hear those. So go ahead and email us. It's calamitypodcast@gmail.com. And also you can follow us on Facebook by searching for Calamity Podcast. And we also have a Twitter handle. So you can send messages directly to us by using @podcastcalamity. And we hope to hear from you there. All right. Yes. Take care.
Stay safe, everybody.
Bye.